to the Movie Vault.
I am Zach.
And I'm Ben.
And I'm Jake.
And I'm Blake.
And today we have a whole slew of people on the podcast, as it's Halloweekend, and Zach cringed when I said Halloweekend, and well, everyone's just in good spirits and excited, because Halloween is really just about getting candy and going from house to house. There's no other things that could possibly happen on Halloween night. Well, unless you're to believe what's in this movie that we are reviewing tonight. Jake, what's the name of the movie that we're reviewing?
Halloween.
Wow. Profound. I bet there was a large meeting, a business meeting. What are we going to call this? How are we going to signify what this movie is about? We could call it Michael Myers. We could call it...
Christmas.
They could have themed it around Christmas, right? But they didn't. So, they could have still called it Christmas. That would have just been confusing. But this movie is the first from horror director John Carpenter. Is it actually his first movie, or is it just his first well-known movie?
I think it's his first
movie. I will look that up. I was under the impression that it is his first one. Because he is, of course, known for being...
It's his second movie.
Okay, so he made a movie called...
Assault on Precinct 13.
Well, there's actually... He made one before that called Dark Star. So it's his third movie.
Yeah, but this I was assuming this is the first one he had that was successful. So that's probably a good way to describe it. And then, of course, he went on to make other movies like The Fog, The Thing... They Live. I'm just going through the ones that
Big Trouble in Little China.
Big Trouble in Little China.
Wait, he made The Thing?
Yeah, he made The Thing.
Wasn't that?
That is an interesting aspect of this, is that there was a TV show or movie called The Thing in this and Halloween. So I'd be curious to know. I would guess that maybe he made that up for the movie, or that he based The Thing on an older TV show.
It's based off an older movie.
It's based off an older movie. Okay. That makes sense. So, just to quickly summarize the plot of Halloween. The plot centers on mental patient Michael Myers, who killed his sister as a 6-year-old for no apparent reason. And then 15 years later, he escapes and returns back to his hometown. He is being tracked down by Dr. Loomis, who is his psychiatrist. But he's stalking Jamie Lee Curtis's character, Nancy. That's her name, right? No, it's Laurie
Strode.
I don't know why. Nancy must be from...
Stranger Things.
Another movie. She seemed like she would be a Nancy.
It's the hair.
But she's a Laurie. And so Laurie is babysitting Tommy, and she has a couple of friends named Annie and some other girl, Linda. Very 70s names. And Linda says totally, like in 50% of the lines that she says.
Or Lindsay. It's one of the two.
It's one of the two. It doesn't really matter. And... Laura's the only one who actually matters in this movie. So essentially, once Michael returns to the Illinois town that he is from, he stalks Laurie. They drive around and stuff. They start babysitting, and then he kills Annie first. He then kills Bob and Linda, and then that attracts enough attention that Laurie, who's watching not only her Tommy, but also the girl that Annie was supposed to be babysitting, but went off to spend time, quote unquote, with her boyfriend. But she never made it, of course. But Laurie doesn't know that, and so she goes over to the house, see what's going on. Turns out everyone's dead, and she finds them all in one sequence where. Like, Michael Myers has meticulously staged all of the bodies so that she comes upon them one at a time in really weird ways. And then she almost gets killed, but she escapes, takes Michael to the house with the kids, which I guess she didn't have any other better place to go, because her neighbor was just shut the blinds. I don't know what the deal with
her
that
neighbor was not a real one.
Not a real one. And she stabs him with like a crochet needle, or I don't know what you call those. You know what those are called, Zach? You seem like you know about crochet.
Well, let me tell you, Ben. I don't know.
Either way, it doesn't make any sense that it worked. Yeah.
Well, I think the idea is that she like stabbed him like near the jugular vein or somewhere that would be more potentially dangerous. But then she drops the knife and goes upstairs and is like, everything's okay. And of course, now we know, based on horror tropes, that the killer obviously isn't dead. And so Michael comes back upstairs again. This time she gets him with a hanger and stabs him with a knife. And she's like, but she puts the knife down again. And then she sends the kids have gone away. And now she's like, everything's good. And of course, he's still not dead. So he comes back. And this time, Dr. Loomis is actually, after standing by a bush the entire movie.
Dr. Loomis kind of disappeared the entire second half of that movie.
Yeah. No, he was standing by the bush. That's the explanation.
And he didn't see that car park.
And then once he found the car, he was just walking house by house down. This isn't a big town. I think it was called like Haddonfield or something. Haddonfield. And,
Illinois, right?
It's in Illinois. So I think we're supposed to assume it's like a small Midwestern town. It's not big, but it's also not small enough that there's only one row of houses.
I'm just glad something finally happened in Illinois.
Yes, yeah. I assume that's kind of somewhere in Illinois that's not Chicago, right?
Yeah.
So that's probably what they were trying to create.
Gone for Iowa.
I mean, that would also fit too, I feel like. Having recently been to both, like, Illinois, not Chicago, part of Illinois, and Iowa, I can tell you that this definitely fit the picture of what it's like. Not a lot going on. Seems like people are pretty nice.
Lots of serial killers.
Tons of serial killers. I mean, I was in Moline, and I wouldn't have been surprised if there was a serial killer there.
But even then, like, I know it was normal, but those kids were just, like, walking around by themselves.
Yeah, no, but it was a safe town. I think that was the idea.
I know, but if you're leaving your kids out, it's going to eventually never... It's not going to stay safe forever.
True. You're right. It's not going to stay safe forever. And so eventually, so Loomis kills him, but he disappears at the end of the movie. So we don't really know what happens to him. And then that's just the end. So that's pretty much all there is to it.
That's it.
Wrap it up. Okay, immediate reactions. Jake, what's your immediate reaction? I'm assuming this is not the first time you've seen this movie.
No, this is the second time I've seen it. The first time I saw it, I thought it was probably one of the best horror movies I've ever seen. Now, it's like really cheesy looking back on it. There's a lot of really dumb moments that are really annoying, but it's still kind of fun.
Did you watch it by yourself at first?
Yeah.
And how many horror movies had you seen before you watched
probably
Halloween?
One, maybe.
Okay, Psycho. See, that makes sense. And Psycho predates Halloween and is arguably pretty influential on Halloween. I think that in Wikipedia they specifically reference the movies Psycho and Black Christmas as being important movies. I have not seen Black Christmas. I have seen Psycho, and it kind of makes sense because of the knife.
Yeah.
And the scenes with the... All right, Blake, what was your reaction? You haven't seen this before, right?
Yeah. Wasn't the movie made in like the 70s?
Yes, it was made in the 70s.
Yeah. I feel like it was a pretty well done movie for like a movie that came out in the 70s. Like, so of course it's gonna be like cheesy and stuff because it's like made in the 70s and movies have come a long way. So we're used to like more higher production movies. And so a movie back like made in the 70s is gonna be more cheesy and like offsetting, I guess. And so it was pretty well done for the 70s. And the music track was really good too.
Also. Yeah, that's a good takeaway, I think.
It's probably the most iconic horror soundtrack.
Yes, I can. I'll agree with that. And Jaws. Jaws is like arguably like, I guess it is a horror movie, but I feel like I put it in a different genre.
Yeah, but
Shark has become its own subgenre.
Compared,
it's a subgenre of horror. But you're right. The soundtracks probably are both equally as important to the movie.
Yeah,
their respective movies.
I think the thing for me, my reaction was probably like, after the first time watching it, I watched it on like my iPad or a phone or something, and I was like, that was pretty cool, but I wasn't paying attention. I paid more attention this time. And I think I agree with Jake, like, when you watch it with people, you start to realize it's pretty cheesy, but also, like, there's, like, I don't know, I was trying to see if there was a deeper underlying message in it, because I remember in the classroom when the teacher was talking, she was talking about the different two different pathways of fate, and I was like, well, is that what's happening to Michael Myers? Is he having a fate where his fate is already set, where he's been waiting, you know, 15 years for this moment to come? And he hasn't said a word in 15 years. He finally escapes and somehow knows how to drive. He's been practicing somehow. And then he gets out and doesn't die when he's, like, shot, stabbed, and crocheted. So I feel like fate was already set for him.
Yeah. I was actually, now that you bring that up, I was kind of thinking, I hadn't really connected the dots, but I was kind of thinking, wow, this scene probably is not just, like, completely, it's not like a red herring. You know, where it's like they're just saying something just to say something. Like, because it was so specific what the teacher was talking about in that scene that you were like, this has to be somehow related to the movie. So that kind of makes sense.
I could be wrong. I just felt like that was the only thing I could pull out of it.
I think it's true. Now, I think it's so hard in retrospect because I think everyone has brought it up. Like, I've definitely watched horror movies in the wrong order for this movie. Like, I already have I watched, like, Scream for the first time a couple weeks ago. And that's, like, was basically after, I don't know, almost 20 years of having movies based off of Halloween come out. Wes Craven decided, and whoever wrote that movie, I don't think Wes Craven wrote Scream, but decided that they were going to make a movie that was, like, sort of play, like, made fun of the stereotypes and embraced them at the same time, and was sort of a spoof, sort of, in some ways, almost broke the fourth wall in a lot of areas, and you know, it kind of just, like, identifies, like, what the stereotypes are in slasher movies. Like, okay, the characters that have premarital sex, you know, those ones are gonna die, and so the girl who's a virgin, she's gonna live, and she has superpower because she gets away from the villain and the kill, and so all of that, like, and some of that's added, like, it's not explicitly stated in the movie any of those things, but as these movies came out, it sort of led up to, like, okay, these are the stereotypes of the genre. But you kind of forget that, like, all of that started with this movie. So, like, I would be interested to know, like, how they, and I don't know that there's a good answer for this, but how they decided to, like, structure the movie in the way that they did. Because it seemed like it's a pretty deliberate movie. Like, this, like, you have a thing that happens, an escape, and then you have a deliberate killer on the loose kind of, like, plot. Everything kind of moves forward. But yet all these, like, stereotypes are, like, set in place in every aspect, but they weren't necessarily stereotypes at the time. So that's kind of, like, you have to, like, kind of take yourself out of, like, after we've seen all of these different horror movies, like, what would it have been like to watch this movie in 1978 for the first time?
Yeah, you just have to set yourself back during that time to watch a movie like this. Because at this point, we've seen this movie a bajillion times in every other horror movie that has come out. But the fact that this is the first one is kind of cool.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. It set the stereotype for it. But I was looking online, and maybe this is something that both Ben and Jake would be good at. I think, like, when you think about how influential it was, after the fact, after 1978, you know, you have it being going down as, like, one of the best Halloween films of all time. I looked at this. There's this segment, 2-hour television special on ABC, People Magazine, and what was it? Tom Bergeron and Cynthia McFadden hosted this thing called the best and greatest movies of our time. And the second movie in horror was Halloween. Number one, what was number one? I think it was
The Shining.
No, it was The Exorcist.
Oh, that makes sense.
And then third was Poltergeist, fourth was Carrie, fifth was Nightmare on Elm Street, which we've also reviewed. So I think, you know, it's probably Michael Myers is one of the most iconic, you know, masks that you can get at the store today. You know, you can just literally go to Meijer and they probably have a Michael Myers mask there. That's just how common it is. But they also like archived it in like the National Archives for like if humanity, like if we die in a nuclear war, it will be saved. So I feel like that would be pretty important, you know. So I don't know. I don't know, like, you got to think, like, what Blake said, like, at the time it was the best. So, like, even if we don't think it's the best now, I think at the time it was the best, and I think it influenced so many different things, because it was new. There were a lot of new things. Like, these jump scares, even though it was a slow build, these jump scares were new. These, like, fake outs. You know what I talk about? We talked about this in Barbarian, Ben, where there's these fake outs where, like, you think something's about to happen, but then it doesn't, and the tension dies down. And I hate those, but this kind of created those.
Yeah, because I actually, like, during the movie, I would think, I was like, okay, they're building up to something. Are they building up to a jump scare? Or are they building it up, bringing it back down, and then somewhere in the rebuild up, they're going to scare you? Because there was a couple moments where I was trying to predict the jump scare, and I still couldn't. Which is, like, a little bit, like, shocking, because you think that, like, this one should be easy to predict. But there, like, if you're really technically trying to figure out, like, what moment exactly will it be, it's tough because, well, actually, so I had watched the first 45 minutes of this, and then I ended up not being able to finish it, and so when we watched in the theaters, I'd already seen 45 minutes of the movie, and I had stopped right in the middle of the laundry scene, where she, and so at this point, I was like, oh, she's gonna get killed, like, here, right now, and the thing that surprised me the most probably was that she didn't end up dying right then. So that was kind of an interesting thing.
But something that I was thinking, so for these types of movies that are kind of iconic and legendary, what would this, I guess in different categories, what would that be? So like in a romantic movies, would you guys know what kind of movie this would be in a romantic movie? Maybe like The Notebook?
Singing in the Rain, maybe.
Okay.
Singing in the Rain.
That's pretty much a romance. What about like an action film?
Die Hard.
Okay. Actually, yeah. that
or Heat or Die Hard probably.
Okay. But then going back, like there's also other legendary movies that are in the archives, like Casablanca, Vertigo.
Yeah.
Citizen Kane. I don't know, but does this movie compare?
I think it can be put in that group, but I don't think it's one of like the better technically movies that have come out. Of the 70s.
I think the hard part in comparing this movie to those movies is that this movie doesn't quite have like the dramatic depth that like most of those other movies do. And that's, I mean, it's not supposed to have that is one of the things.
No.
Because that's not like the goal of the movie. But, and that's where like, I think like this movie started some things. And then if you get into the 80s, like, you see a lot of different direction that horror movies went. I think David Cronenberg did a good job of, like, in some of his movies, like, adding an element of, like, sci-fi or, like, some sort of, like, dramatic depth to his movies to some degree, not exactly. But we still see, like, horror movies being, like, seen as, like, you're like for kind of for shock value and for scare value, whereas like in the last 10 years we've seen horror movies become more what do they call it? Elevated horror, where it's like now it's, it becomes much more about psychological, so you add like kind of merge the traditional like dramatic movie with horror elements and it creates sort of its own new thing.
The only thing about those is those get so predictable.
That's true.
So tired of them.
There's also a difference between like heavy influence and what makes like a really good movie, because you have movies like There Will Be Blood and No Country for Old Men that came out about the same time as Iron Man. But Iron Man is more of an influential movie than both of those movies are, but I mean, I'm sure if you've seen both of those you would agree those two are better movies than Iron Man is. Something doesn't have to be the best for it to have a lot of influence.
That's definitely true. I mean, you can see that in music, like, a lot of the time. Like, a lot of music that's really popular, you're like, Lizzo. Well, you could find, like, bands that you're like, you would think, like, oh, this band was way better. But that for whatever reason, they don't have as much broad appeal, or they just didn't gain the same level of popularity. So in terms of like influence, what is influence? It's just how many people are you reaching, and then how many of those people are like turning into people that are making new art. And so the fact of the matter is that if it reaches more people, it's gonna
that's true. You could say the same thing about McDonald's in a steak. But like, I think what is good about this movie, to give it a little bit more credit, is that it did create some of these tropes that we're talking about. So like, even though it wasn't necessarily well made, even possibly at the time, I think it was well made at the time, but even if we're considering that it wasn't, I think like this type of serial killer, where we're popularizing this madman, this psychopath, this serial killer, in a way where we're making him wear a cool mask, making him go and kill people for fun, and like we're going to the movies and watching it, I think that changed a lot of different things. And obviously, we think of all the killers throughout all of these movies, what do they all have in common? A mask. You know?
Yeah.
And obviously, there have been movies previously to this where the masked serial killer is in it, but this one really pushed it above. And I think, you know, I think that's part of the influence of what John Carpenter did. One thing I wanted to say, I think there are a couple different themes that we could talk about. So one of the themes I was talking about, I mean, it's in all horror movies. It's fear. You know, how do you react to fear? How do you engage with it? How do you, how do you treat it in your life? I don't know. But so you have your three different friends, three different personalities, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they each treat fear just a little bit differently. And two of them end up dead. One of them ends up having some, you know, a stabbing, but that's it. One of them survives.
Mm, interesting.
So what do you think? What do you think that was?
So I think we see the stereotypes. So Lori is like, she's described as the Girl Scout. So she does things the quote unquote by the book or the right way. Like, she's not spending time, trying to hang out. Well, she doesn't have a boyfriend. She doesn't even really talk to guys. She sort of cringes over the matter.
Was it Ben Tramer? What is it?
Ben Tramer. She sort of admits to like thinking about it, but she doesn't participate in any of the hooking up or drinking. Well, literally one of the, they're like drinking and driving in the literal sense, where they're like actually have open containers of alcohol while they're driving, which is funny that they like, I feel like nowadays they wouldn't even allow that in a movie, because it'd be like too, like they would be trying to crack down on the same way they've cut down on like smoking like cigarettes and cigars in movies, like, it used to be that they would do it in, like, every movie, because I guess everyone did it at that point, too. People have kind of cut down on that in general. Violet kind of got off track there. But anyway, Lori was, I think she takes things seriously. So like, all the other people are just kind of, like, assuming that nothing's wrong until, like, the very last moment when they realize that it isn't. And they're doing things that are wrong. And so, I guess Michael Myers is not like, I don't think you should read this film like Michael Myers is like doing any sort of justice or anything like that. But it is like they let their guard down in a lot of senses. Like Bob and Linda, for example, walk into the house, and they're like, well, this is weird, nobody's home. But instead of like thinking that it's weird and like trying to look into what might be going on that would cause that, they kind of just take advantage of that moment. But they also end up being in a vulnerable position when something is actually wrong. But it is their own fault for not, in some senses, even though it's still Michael's fault for being a killer. But they don't.
It is his fault.
Yeah. It is his fault. It's not, but their actions do leave them in a vulnerable state, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think what this movie kind of portrays, whether or not this was like one of the main parts, was everybody seems to ignore their fears. There's a specific scene where I remember Lori jumping on her bed and saying, "Don't be ridiculous, calm down," or something like that. And I just remember being like, you just saw a guy in your backyard and you're trying to calm yourself down, you know? It just seems a little odd. So I think that suppression of fear is kind of what causes all these problems to be had. You know, I'm sure she's okay. Maybe she'll come, you know? We haven't heard from her in an hour. I'm sure she's fine. I'm sure she just stopped somewhere, she says. You know, she suppresses it. There's no boogeyman out there. You're just seeing things twice.
Yeah.
Okay.
That, and that's to say, even the person who's doing it by the book and is like afraid, you're right, she's still like repressing that fear.
Mm-hmm. And then I think of Linda or whatever, the one with who brought in Bob. And by the way, that scene where he dressed up as a ghost was hilarious.
That was one of the, like, I was like Michael Myers has a sense of humor.
Yeah. But yeah, I think she just didn't care at all. Maybe a good in-between would be the other friend that dies first. But yeah, I think each of these girls are just kind of ignoring fear. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I feel like Lori was like, she had the most fear, which led to her survival. But the other two friends were like oblivious to the serial killer. And well, also like they were just kind of dumb because they like saw the killer and stuff, but they weren't really doing anything. But Lori was also doing that. So I don't know. They were all really oblivious to the killer.
Yeah.
Like Zach said, like Lori was, she saw the Michael Myers like multiple times, but she wouldn't really do anything about it. And she wouldn't say anything. Oh. Sorry.
No, I agree. I think a basic horror movie thing is where people are just dumb. Like, have you seen those State Farm commercials where it's like, oh, the guy's chasing us, let's go hide in the garage with chainsaws, you know? I think that's where that came from, yeah.
Lori was making me mad in the movie because she was like, she kept just making dumb decisions.
Yeah.
Like the first time she stabbed Michael Myers in the eye with, like, a knife or something.
Yeah, the crochet.
She was like, oh, it's fine, I stabbed him once. So she laid down on the couch and was like, oh, I'm good.
But then she always turns around and doesn't face him.
And she
look at him.
She didn't even get the knife back.
At one point, I was thinking, at this point, like, after he's, like, come back once, after you thought he was dead, like, literally just decapitate him. Like, what is...
Dismember him. Put his head in boiler.
That's why they do what they do in the brand new movie to finish off Michael Myers.
Oh, wait, tell us. Spoiler, who cares? Go ahead.
That's Halloween Ends. Nobody's
for
gonna
a
watch
spoiler
it.
For Halloween Ends, they basically grind up Michael Myers' body in front of the whole city at the end of the movie to make sure. And like what they do with old cars when they put the cars down and they destroy the cars.
Oh, yeah, the grinder thing.
They put Michael Myers
like in Breaking Bad. You know, have you ever seen The Iron Giant?
No.
Has anybody?
Ben? I haven't.
There's this scene, so is it okay if I say it?
Yeah, go ahead.
So there's a scene where the Iron Giant's all broken and his parts are spread all around the ocean in the world. And then the parts start shaking. And then they all come together like a magnet. And I think that's what's going to happen in the next Halloween trilogy.
They'll do something. They'll just make Michael Myers into like Leatherface or something like that. Just a different version of Leatherface. Just stitch them all back together and have him run around and kill people.
Which,
you know, I'm making another trilogy?
Probably not yet.
I would imagine that this is not the end of Halloween, even though it's called Halloween Ends, but it might not be for a little bit. Like, we might get a little bit of a gap, maybe like 10 years.
I don't know. Jamie Lee Curtis is like 70 years old.
Yeah, well, they might have to restart the whole thing, I guess, with somebody who's...
Harrison Ford is like 80, and is filming Indiana Jones 5 right now.
That's going to be so weird.
At the end of the day, it's all about what's going to make them... more millions, so they're gonna keep putting them out,
I guess. But was Halloween Ends a success?
I don't know, I'd have to look. Okay. Ben, you want to look and see if Halloween Ends
I guess that's a good
I know it wasn't a critical success, but that doesn't always matter.
But that's a good thing. So you've seen all three of the new trilogy, right?
Yeah.
Have you seen all the Halloween movies in between?
No, I've seen the original Halloween and I've seen the original of the sequels, so Halloween 1 and Halloween 2. And then I saw the 2018
Rob Zombie
trilogy.
Oh, no, you didn't see the Rob Zombie
one? I didn't see the Rob Zombie
one. Did you see the one, like the Witch Coven one?
No, once you got to Halloween 3, the Witch one, I didn't watch any of those until the new trilogy.
So maybe, I guess Halloween Ends still was relatively financially successful. I mean, it more than doubled its money. It was $33 million budget, $87.4 million return. So not horrible. I mean, that's not great in comparison to the original Halloween's $300,000 budget and $70 million return. Wow. That's a pretty good return there.
You can tell it was a $300,000 budget because there was like a 10-minute scene where he's just shaking the closet.
Also, some of the POV shots, which I thought was a really interesting choice, were just really weird. Especially one that I thought made no sense. When he was following Tommy in the car.
Yes.
The guy, there was like a POV shot, which we had seen before in the other parts of the movie. But it wasn't a POV of
Michael,
because it was in the back seat and you could see Michael. It was like, why didn't they just put it in the front seat?
I also noticed that. It was really weird.
It was a little disorienting.
It makes it kind of confusing on what's going on, too.
You're like, how did Michael get in there?
Yeah.
You're like, why is Michael in the back seat? Is he going to jail? I don't know.
Another funny thing that we were thinking about is just the whole, what's it, Dr. Loomis. That, how useless he was in the entire movie and probably wasn't needed. Right? He's just the gun at the end. Right? He gets the sheriff in, but the sheriff doesn't help with anything.
The doctor, spoiler alert, always ends up useless in every one of these
Hollywood movies. Okay, so he's in the rest.
I don't know if specifically Loomis is in the rest. I can't remember. All the actors look completely different now, so I don't know if it was
that. That's old definitely guy. Not that guy. That guy is too old to be still in the movies. Yeah.
But basically, the doctors are never useful in these movies. They never really do anything important.
Did they give the new doctor a Baywatch body?
Yeah, they did.
Of course. They always do that.
Of course.
Yeah.
The doctor could be like, as you guys were talking about fear earlier, it could be like, because wasn't he like the most fearful in the movie?
He was the most rational, at least.
Yeah. He had the most reason to fear, too.
That goes along with the theme, kind of, because he was like the most fearful and smart, I guess, because he knew what was going on. He was like warning the police. But I don't understand why he like, in the movie, he told the cops not to tell anyone.
Yeah.
That was confusing. I agree.
Well, I think he knew where Michael was, and he didn't want to cause.
Yeah, but
did he not want to cause?
I don't. That was just stupid.
No, wait. He said because they'll be looking for him everywhere. They'll be looking in houses. Why is that a bad thing?
Yeah, that actually was one thing that I was like, this is a significant plot hole. If you know that there's a serial killer or a guy who's potentially to be a serial killer on the loose, you don't just say, "Don't call the cops." And then if you're the cop, you don't. Like, he's taking orders from a guy who's has no authority over him.
He just met.
Yeah. And he's just like, okay.
So back then, you could just go around and say, I'm Dr. Whatsoever, and get whatever you want, right?
Yeah.
The funny part is even if they got the whole town in on it, the whole town couldn't beat Michael Myers. They did that in Halloween Kills.
Yeah.
And Michael Myers just obliterates all of the townspeople right in front of each other.
Is it still Haddonfield in those movies?
Yeah.
And, okay, correct me if I'm wrong. The trilogy of Halloween, Halloween Kills, and Halloween Ends continues from this first movie.
Yeah, so basically there's like three separate timelines. Mm-hmm. There's a Rob Zombie thing that's like outside of there, and Halloween, the Season of the Witch, is kind of outside of there, but also kind of sort of involved. Basically, the new trilogy, it just runs this Halloween movie, then the 2018 one, then Halloween Kills, then Halloween Ends, and then all the old Halloween movies are in their own little universe thing, but
okay,
it's kind of weird.
Okay, yes, I have it right here. So you have the original Halloween. That's canon in all timelines, okay? Then you have four branches. First branch goes straight to Halloween 3, okay? The second branch goes to Halloween 2, and then from that second branch, there's two more branches with Halloween H2O, and then Halloween Resurrection, and then the other branch of the second branch is Halloween 4, Halloween 5, and Halloween 6. Then you have your third branch, which is Halloween 2018, then your Kills and Ends. Then you have your fourth branch, which is your Rob Zombies 1 and 2.
Yeah, the new Halloween trilogy, I like the idea of the new Halloween trilogy more than I actually like it. I thought the 2018 one was good. Kills and Ends were both not great. I thought Ends was actually pretty terrible. But the pure idea of bringing Laurie back to Haddonfield, because the whole trilogy revolves around Laurie basically left to just go into hiding and go into training just in case Michael Myers ever comes back, and she has to learn how to settle down and come back to Haddonfield and deal with that. Mm-hmm. And now she has like grandkids and stuff like that. And it's like a pretty cool idea. Especially now going back after seeing Halloween Ends and watching the original one and seeing how far the character has grown. It's kind of cool.
Okay. Yeah. I could see how that kind of could be cool. Like, I think of the Saw franchise where it's like they just keep building and going in weird directions, but it continues. They try to continue it for like a horror franchise. And I thought like some of the reveals in the Saw movies were pretty cool. But at the end of the day, they're just low budget, weird, you know, horror movies. But apparently there's a timeline where Laurie Strode is dead, and that consists of Halloween 4, 5, and 6. And then there's like Rob Zombie just started over the whole thing. And then the new trilogy is the 40-year gap after the original.
I don't know much about the Rob Zombie ones, but I've heard that he like goes a lot more into the backstory of Michael Myers. That's pretty much all I know. And I imagine that they have a much different style than all of the other ones, just based on, like, I've seen House of 10,000 Corpses. Rob Zombie has a very distinct, strange movie style. So it's interesting. I'd be interested to at least maybe watch the first one that Rob Zombie did.
The Rob Zombie point. Ones are also the most hated ones.
That probably series. Wouldn't be too shocking.
They are, like, apparently shockingly horrible. And just, like, vile and gross. And
well, that's, again, going back to Rob Zombie's style. That would not be surprising.
Apparently Halloween 3 is just unrelated to everything.
Yeah, there's no Michael Myers in it. It's like the first Friday the 13th doesn't have Jason Voorhees in it either.
But why did they pick the third one to not include their titular character?
I don't know. I think they probably wanted to branch out the universe a little bit, and then the third one didn't do well because they realized that Michael Myers is the center of their universe.
Yeah.
So they just decided to do more Michael.
Huh.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's, you know, nobody's going to take the time like we did just now to look at a timeline for Halloween, you know? So I think people are just happy to see Michael Myers, and I think they had to realize, like, the audience is just there to see Michael Myers kill people, so put him on the screen.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing about these horror franchises in general, is that, like, you have to remember that, like, it seems like they don't necessarily make the first movie with the intentions that there's going to be 12 other movies after, right? Although I guess they did leave this one a little bit open-ended so that they could have a sequel. But like, once it, like, takes off, then they're like, well, we got to make another one. But, like, the more that you do, the less it makes sense, because, and the more chance that you're just, like, repeating the same thing over and over again, essentially. So, but people want to see it, so they don't want to just keep watching. I guess they don't want to just keep watching Halloween over and over again. That's not good enough.
Yeah, I doubt people are watching Michael Myers movies or Halloween movies just for, like, the plot or anything. They're only seeing it for Michael Myers killing people.
True.
And gore and stuff.
Yeah, I agree. So there was a second theme that I was kind of thinking about, and that is responsibility. What do you think responsibility had to do with the fates of the characters?
Notice how the people who died were babysitting no kids by the end, and the people who the people who didn't survive were not babysitting any kids when they got killed, and the people who did survive were babysitting kids.
And I even think of responsibility outside of the temporal. I think of, like, she was studying hard for her classes. They were out partying, right?
True.
I don't know. I don't know.
No, that's definitely part of it too. Yeah.
She's smarter. But then she also is dumb in this movie. So, you know, they have some good points, but they kind of ruin it with some of their dumb mistakes. Let's list all of Laurie's dumb mistakes. I feel like that'd be good.
Whatever she would, like, knock about for the first time, she would just leave him there.
Yeah, and she wouldn't face his direction. Yeah. She would drop the knife.
Yep.
She told the kids to lock themselves in the bathroom.
She literally did everything that she did felt like she was putting the kids in an unsafe situation. Yeah. I could be wrong, but it felt like, I don't know. Like, she literally brought the killer to the kid's house. That doesn't feel like something you should do as a babysitter.
And instead of running down the street, she instead chose to run up to each individual house and stand at the door and wait for every single person to come turn their lights on. There was a lot of very dumb decisions throughout this movie.
Also, the neighbor was just an all-time L neighbor. Like, what is the deal?
He was an all-time L neighbor.
No. 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 Like, remorse. Like, just, he just looked... a girl is yelling and screaming on your porch. Looks like something is definitely wrong, and you're just like, nope, can't help you.
My papa, was it, someone would call that a savage, right? Someone? Papa?
Yeah, he's a savage.
Papa Randy. That's what I'm thinking. No, I think he just looks through the window and shakes his head no. He's like, nope, not today. I'm going back to bed. No, that was good. I think the worst one for me was when she told the kids to go lock themselves in the bathroom or something. And she doesn't go in there with them when there's a lock on the door. And she decides that she'll be separate from the kids. That's a mistake, by the way. You don't leave the kids by themselves, even when they have, when you could have locked yourself in with them. And she decides to hide in the closet.
Yeah, why is she separate from the kids? No, what if he goes for the kids first?
Yeah, I don't.
Unless, they're not going to be able to protect themselves.
Unless she had figured out that he was after her, which he is after her, then that would have been the right move. But not the closet part. I would have jumped off the balcony. Right? I don't know.
You think that Michael would have followed her if she jumped off?
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't. He can come back to. He regenerates, I guess.
Yeah.
Did now this movie was like technically grounded, right? They tried to fit it within reality for the first part of the movie, right? It's a mental patient. They didn't make him an alien, right? Nope. Not an alien killing people. He's a mental patient. We have mental patients on Earth. You good? And he was like actually like a creepy person that we could see in real life, maybe. Now, near the end when he becomes immortal, is that weird? Do you think when? Whoever was writing the script was writing the script to make it realistic and then was like, no, I need a sequel. Let's keep him alive. Or I need more plot. This movie can't be an hour and 10 minutes.
With the lack in budget in this movie, I do not think that straight from the beginning they had a sequel planned.
Okay.
Because, I mean, that proves that this wasn't something that studios were like putting all their confidence in. So I doubt that it was originally planned to immediately have a sequel.
Do you think they tested, screened it, and then made? Because I do think that the fact that Michael Myers gets away in the end is props of a sequel.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not like props of like that there was confirmed going to be a sequel. It just allows for the opportunity.
What I'm saying is it seemed grounded, right?
That's right.
My point. It seemed very grounded. At least they were trying to keep it within the real world. And then right at the end, it takes a turn for the immortal, super spiritual, for the non-reality.
It could have been, like, pacing, maybe, or, like, a twist at the end. Like
twist is what I was thinking.
Yeah. You think that he's normal, but then you figure out later in the movie that this isn't a regular person, that this is some being or monster.
But, like, his family, there's no backstory with his family or with powers or anything like that, and there's nothing, like... I don't know. He just seemed like a mental patient. And the doctor would know if he had some kind of special powers. But apparently the doctor said within his eyes was just evil. So I don't know.
Yeah.
He diagnosed him with evil. Isn't that impressive?
Man, medical school back then. Ben and I said in this movie, we're like, this guy went through 8 years of training just to stand behind that bush the entire time.
Yeah. Well, prepared him and apparently boss around police officers, I mean, too.
He scared some kids too. That was pretty funny.
That's true. And it takes an hour and a half to find out that the car that he's looking for is right behind him.
Yeah, literally the car drove like behind him in the... It's so frustrating. But then, of course, yeah, there's no movie without this. Without... You know, these mistakes and stuff that are made by the characters.
I feel like you could. I want smart people back in movies. That's what I want.
What would a horror movie with smart people look like?
The exact episode of Rick and Morty where they have the remake of what's the movie we just reviewed? Nightmare on Elm Street.
Oh, Scary Terry.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one's so... Oh, I love that.
That's smart people in that. Because Rick just goes and kills them.
Yeah. Scary... No, doesn't Scary Terry... No, that's in a different dimension. No,
he kills the people.
What's the one where Scary Terry like goes back home to his family? Because it's also a spoof of Inception at the same time.
It's so good. That's like the fifth time we talked about it on the podcast.
That's probably... that's going to be the most referenced Rick and Morty episode. I forget what it's even called. It's probably called like Rickception or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. But yeah, no, I think that's smart people in horror movies. There's not many, which is really sad. Maybe like if you consider Sixth Sense.
You have to do the Scream thing where they like confuse the people because they're like constantly referencing horror movies. So like, it doesn't seem like it's actually happening. It seems like you're talking about it, but then it actually is happening too at the same time.
Because you think that's what we would do if we were in that situation.
Yeah, like
it's. You think I would be like, if someone walked through the door with a mask, you think I'd be like, that's like from Halloween.
Yeah.
I mean, I would.
At first, until it was made obvious that it wasn't, like.
Well, I mean, like, and then I hear piano in like a piano, like do 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 do, and I'll be like, "That's from Halloween." Do 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 do. Do you think I would?
Maybe.
Yeah.
You might.
But yeah, no, Scream. I need to watch it. I know exactly what it is. I've seen clips, but because
we'll do it for the podcast.
We should, point. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if there were smart horror movies, I would be on to that, but. There are not, and I think that's because it's so cemented as the stereotypical prototype of a horror movie is just having these dumb characters.
Oh, the episode is actually called Returnal Friendshine of the Spotless Mort.
Oh my gosh.
Which is funny because we reviewed that
they're movie. Trying to incept a memory, right? Which yeah. is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
True.
Right?
Yeah, so they're combining tons of different stuff together. Anyway, I'm trying to think if there's any other major, like, I mean, responsibility is a huge one because, yeah, all of the decisions made by the other characters, not the other high school characters, not Lori, are like there are in a lot of ways typical mistakes and things that high school students make, but they're also, I don't know. I don't even know. I don't know exactly why they're included in such a way. I feel like people theorize about that, but. The main point is that she's responsible, so she, even though she's afraid and she still has the issue with fear, she's seems more capable of being able to handle a situation that's not
that's true.
That doesn't go like according to plan, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. It's because it's in those textbooks.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Use the hanger.
Yep.
It's in the textbooks.
Speaking of textbook stuff, who could help you if you're in a stressful situation like that?
Let's first go over what stressful situations there could be. One, you get in a car accident. Two, your house is on fire and you have no house anymore, or your house is damaged. Three, you find out that you have mold in your walls. Okay.
That's the worst one.
Yeah.
I'd rather get in a car accident and have my children burn in the house.
Well, if you're in any of these situations, call Hedman Anglin Agency. They're known for saving people money on auto, home, and business insurance. So if you happen to be in any of these three unfortunate situations that I just laid out for you, call 614-486-7300. That's 614-486-7300, and they'll save you money even if you currently have a policy. They can probably save you some money on that. And what can you do with that extra money? You can invest it in Bitcoin. And what will that Bitcoin do? It will grow. And then you can reinvest that Bitcoin into other investments and diversify your virtual currency. And then eventually you'll be a multi-quadrillionaire. And then it'll all be thanks to switching over to this.
That's true. The first trillionaires will be in our generation.
True.
That's what's projected to be.
Okay. So,
will it be you? Exciting. Will you invest in Bitcoin?
Will it be you? It's up to you. 614-486-7300.
By now. And if you tell them Ben and Zach sent you, and cardboard cutout still on the line. Right?
Yep.
Okay, just making sure we're on the same page.
All right. Do we want to go over our final statements?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Because I like at the end of the day, it's fun. I think it's a fun movie. But I think like next year I'll probably watch something else. And we should probably say like last year we tried to watch this movie, but we ended up seeing the newer one on accident. Or was that 2 years
ago? That was 2 years ago, technically. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so we have all. We've actually reviewed that. I have no idea what we've said, but we've reviewed the new Halloween, the 2018 one. I think it was like episode 11 or 12.
We're going to go way back. 2020, right?
Yeah. If you want to go way back into the archives, we probably still had a 10-point rating system, and we probably were still spending most of the episode on that. So you can hear whether it was probably like a 5.6, maybe.
I don't know. I can't remember.
But I do think I like this movie more than that movie. I think that movie suffers from just It's cool looking, but I don't know. Where's
the content?
I think maybe it's just understanding the importance of this movie also just makes me like it more, which is maybe not the best reason to like something, but I don't know. And it's an hour and a half, perfect length for a movie.
Yep, that's true.
So that too. Yeah. Blake, what's your final thoughts on Halloween?
Well, this movie wasn't really meant to be like a plot-filled, serious movie, I guess. It was just supposed to be like a horror fun movie to watch. So, and the movie accomplished that pretty good, actually, especially for the 70s. The soundtrack was really good. It enhanced the movie experience. And I feel like overall, especially in the 70s, the movie accomplished what it was trying to do. So it was actually pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Jake?
I think that the movie is doing a really good job of being just really entertaining. It's not trying to be much more. It introduces a whole bunch of really influential horror things, and it kind of just keeps a lot of those tropes going, like the final girl and just tropes like that. And yeah, the soundtrack is obviously classic. That soundtrack is still being used now for the modern movies. They're still playing the same song. So yeah, I think that they did a good job on this movie, and it's a classic for a reason.
And before we go, Jake, what's your top three favorite movies right now? I want to know if they've changed.
Of the year or in general?
In general.
Social Network's up there. Okay. Nightcrawler is up there.
Okay.
And Back to the Future.
Okay, so it hasn't changed. Those were the three you said last time. Okay. Yeah. Just making sure.
Mine's changed. Deer Hunter's in my top three now.
Deer Hunter's my number one. Yep. If you like to hunt deer, you'd love this movie.
That's what it's about.
It's about hunting deer.
I mean, it actually is, but
yeah, hunting deer in the Vietnam War.
And a little bit of a side tangent into the wedding scene and Russian immigrants.
Don't worry,
in the
it's
US.
A short scene. You'll get through it very easily. Yep. No, I totally agree. It wasn't too big for its britches, but it also wasn't too small for what it was wanting to do. So thank you, John Carpenter, for your contribution to society. Thank you that you did this for me. And thank you.
Thank you. He's still alive, right?
I don't know.
No.
We don't care.
Look it up on your own, especially because you might not be listening to this podcast exactly the year it came out.
Let's see.
Yeah, he's still alive.
Wow.
He's 74.
He could make another movie. Harrison Ford's still working.
Let's work him till they're dead. That's what I say.
He has a website.
What is it about? The official soundtrack. He did make the soundtrack. Thank you for that, too.
Oh, I didn't realize that. That's impressive. Mm-hmm. There's a music tour for Halloween? Wow.
Isn't it just like a triangle? Ding, 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 ding.
This was in 2018, though.
I'm just joking.
So.
Yeah.
I don't know. They just haven't updated that part. All right. Well, with that, we'll close the vault.
Yep.
What? What?
We thought you were going to say something because Jake was holding it to you.
End of podcast.